I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, public apology. President Joe Biden meets with Ukraine's leader to discuss the future of the war with Russia. Trip to Washington. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu accepts an invitation for an address to lawmakers in D.C. We're on Capitol Hill with reaction. Driving the message home. Why a trucker in Chicago is raising awareness of the hostages being held by Hamas. And tune in for this. Choirs from around the world are set to perform at the Vatican. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. Our top story tonight, President Joe Biden delivers a speech overseas aimed directly at Americans saying that he wants to defend democracy. The president spoke from the Normandy coast of France, where he said a feared dictator, Adolf Hitler, had finally met his match. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, the cliffs of Pointe du Hoc were scaled by U.S. Army Rangers during that historic day, June 6, 1944, 8 decades ago. Today, President Joe Biden said the legacy of Pointe du Hoc is a call to stay true to what America stands for. The president added he refuses to believe America's greatness is a thing of the past.
President Joe Biden arrives at Pointe du Hoc, located on the sheer cliffs between Omaha and Utah beaches. Army Rangers used ropes, ladders, and their hands to scale the precipice while under fire 80 years ago.
The Rangers who scaled this cliff didn't know they would change the world, but they did.
U.S. veterans, along with the president's secretaries of defense and state in attendance, Biden's remarks steeped in political overtones, summoning Americans to defend democracy from threats at home and abroad, and casting an implicit contrast with former President Donald Trump.
They stormed the beaches alongside our allies. Does anyone believe these Rangers want America to go it alone today?
Before flying to Normandy, Biden sat down with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Paris and for the first time publicly apologized to the Ukrainian people for the holdup in American military assistance that let Moscow make battlefield gains. And speaking today at the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum, Russian President Vladimir Putin said he sees no current threat to Russia's sovereignty that would warrant the use of nuclear weapons, but again warned Moscow could send weapons to states or others to strike Western targets.
But we're going to win the great state of Arizona, and we're going to tell crooked Joe Biden, you're fired.
Meanwhile, just last night, former President Trump returned to the campaign trail in Arizona, his first appearance in a battleground state since being convicted in New York, blasting President Biden over his handling of the U.S. southern border.
And I have to say, Arizona is being turned into a dumping ground for the dungeons of the third world. They are all coming in.
Separately tonight, just outside the White House, not far from where I'm standing, visitors will notice a big new security feature. Take a look. We shot some video of it earlier today. The Secret Service had a large temporary new fence installed right down the middle of Pennsylvania Avenue. They're concerned about a pro-Palestinian demonstration scheduled for tomorrow. Now, up to 12,000 people are expected to protest the Biden administration's support for Israel in Gaza as that war continues. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, thank you, Owen. And for more on President Biden's meeting with the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, we are joined now by Michael Kimmage, Professor of History at the Catholic University of America and a Senior Associate at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He is also the author of the new book, Collisions, The Origins of the War in Ukraine and the New Global Instability. Professor, great to be with you today. President Biden publicly apologized to President Zelensky for the months-long congressional holdup on military aid and announced another $225 million in aid. Talk to us about the significance of a public apology.
It is pretty uncommon, especially in an election season, for an American president to do something like that. Of course, President Biden is not apologizing for something that he did or didn't do. He's apologizing for something that Congress didn't do, or that Congress didn't do in a timely fashion. So there's maybe just a little bit of party politics in this apology, but it's a pretty unusual event.
Yeah, and last week, President Zelensky, he secured a pledge from Spain of an additional air defense missile, France agreed to provide war planes. Zelensky mentioned in his appearance with President Biden that he wanted to talk about air defense. Why is that such a key request from the Ukrainians?
Well, it's been pivotal to the evolution of the war. Nobody has dominated the skies of Ukraine, which is to say that neither Ukraine nor Russia have, you know, sort of exclusive control over Ukrainian, Ukrainian airspace. But in the last couple of months, Russia has begun to gain certain advantages in this regard, and that has allowed Russia to project all kinds of destructive power across Ukraine. So it's of the essence that Ukraine maintain what it have in terms of its air defenses and also expand and build upon that. There's really no conceivable security for Ukraine without much better air defenses. So you can understand why Zelensky is asking what he's asking for.
Yeah, and as we know, Ukraine has begun to use U.S. weapons to strike on Russian soil. President Biden approved this to protect the Kharkiv area, Ukraine's second largest city. What do you think this signals? And could this be a game changer here?
It's not a game changer. I don't think that the U.S. will allow its weaponry to be used in any big way inside of Russia. I think what it indicates is just how badly things have gone for Ukraine in the last couple of months and how dangerous the situation is around Kharkiv. But I wouldn't say it's a game changer. It's more something that will give Ukraine a bit of an advantage in one of the local theaters of the war, but not too much more than that.
Yeah, and as we before we run out of time, I quickly want to get to this. A lot of talk about these Russian warships that are headed to the Caribbean for military exercises in the coming weeks. Is this something, do you think, the United States should be concerned about, or is this just standard war games?
I think it probably falls more into the category of standard war games, but I think you can also find a larger context behind this move, which is indeed worrisome. Which is Putin's willingness to up the ante. From Putin's perspective, the U.S. is upping the ante by allowing Ukraine to strike within Russia. So it's back and forth. And some of the escalation is symbolic. Some of the escalation is real. But that's a dynamic of the war. And who knows where it's gonna end. So it's sort of worrisome in that regard. But in and of itself, Russian warships in the Caribbean is not much more than a, you know, very symbolic act of provocation.
Well, Professor Kimmage, thank you so much for analysis. I always appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
The prosecution has rested in Hunter Biden's federal gun trial. Today's testimony came from a drug expert and FBI chemist. The prosecution has been trying to highlight Hunter Biden's drug problem as they attempt to prove that he lied when buying a gun in 2018. The defense called Hunter's daughter, Naomi Biden, to the stand to testify about her father's drug use. Jurors were then sent home for the afternoon. The president's son faces three felony charges. He has pleaded not guilty. On July 24th, that is the date, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will address a joint session of Congress, and the political divide over his speech was immediately evident. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has the latest now.
Good evening, Tracy. The address comes a few months after Congress passed a multi-billion-dollar aid package for Israel in its ongoing war with Hamas. Many Democrats have already announced that they plan to boycott the speech. Even Senator Bernie Sanders says he's not going, calling the Israeli leader a war criminal for ignoring the humanitarian crisis in Gaza.
It is a very sad day for our country that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been invited by leaders from both political parties to address a joint session of the United States Congress.
If Bernie Sanders wants to side with the terrorists, that's so be it. And if other Democrats want to do that, it's on them. But I'm telling you, I pray and hope and expect that most of the members of the House of both parties and the Senate will join us for this historic address. It's really important.
House Foreign Affairs Committee Chair Michael McCaul tells me he and Speaker Johnson were on a recent phone call with the Prime Minister, and Netanyahu gratefully accepted the offer.
Very much looking forward to that. I remember the last time he did it. It was a very powerful, bold speech. And I'm hopeful that it will educate a lot of these protesters as to who the real victim is and what Israel is all about.
Democrats remain sharply divided.
I'm still trying to decide exactly what I'm going to do. I'm not going to the speech, but there's a question about how we do that and what that looks like.
I guess the speaker is open to invite whomever he wants or not invite, as he didn't allow a joint session with the president of Kenya, who is here for an official state visit.
So you would not attend?
I am not sure what will be going on that day, and I wouldn't be rearranging my schedule for it.
Other Jewish lawmakers want to hear from the Israeli leader.
It's the perfect time for him to come, because if we can get to a ceasefire deal, then we got to talk about what's next, right? A permanent ceasefire, obviously, the rebuilding of Gaza, what kind of government would we have?
You may recall that Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, the highest-ranking Jewish official in Congress, called for the prime minister to step down and for Israel to elect a new leader. However, he did sign the invitation for him to speak, saying that the U.S. relationship with Israel is ironclad. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Our U.S. lawmakers aren't the only ones who want to talk to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. It has been 8 months since the October 7th terror attacks. And as the parents of American Israeli hostage Hirsch Goldberg Poland tell CNN, they want answers.
Our message to Prime Minister Netanyahu is the hostages must come home. That should have happened 245 days ago. It's got to happen today. There can be no politics, not domestically, not internationally, across any of the mediators. This is a human issue.
And a childhood friend of Hirsch Goldberg Poland is using his time and his truck to raise awareness for the hostages being held by Hamas. Hirsch, a Chicago native, was one of those attacked and taken hostage at the Nova Music Festival on October 7th. And now his childhood friend, Jeremiah Smith, is spending 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, driving his truck equipped with an electronic billboard around Chicago to raise awareness for Hirsch and his fellow hostages. Joining us now from Chicago is Jeremiah Smith. We are so happy to have you on the show. Thank you so much for your time, Jeremiah. First off, tell us a little bit about your friend Hirsch.
So a lot of people ask me this question, like, why am I driving a truck as me being an African-American man, and how I'm connected to this truck. So when I was 6 years old, Hirsch's grandmother, who was Marcy Goldberg, and who was Rachel Goldberg's mother, she kind of like adopted me into the family. And, you know, she was my tutor. And she used to have me over for Shabbat dinners every weekend, you know, take me to places, teach. Well, she was basically my teacher. And she, like, kind of, like, just took me in, and that's when I met Hirsch, and he was 2 years old at the time. And I always wanted a little brother, so he was my little brother at the time.
That is wonderful. When you heard that he was taken hostage, what went through your mind? What did you think?
So I didn't hear until the next day about what happened. Well, the first thing that came to my mind is, like, man, I hope he's not dead, of course, because they don't know. They didn't know if he was taken at that time or under bodies or anything at that time. So the first thing I thought about was Marcy, which I call her my grandmother. And I just ran over to her to try to comfort her. And, you know, and my heart just dropped, because I didn't think something like this would happen to someone so close to me.
Yeah, it's so hard to believe, I'm sure, in many ways you felt helpless. But you decided to do this and raise awareness with your truck. Tell us how you came up with that idea.
So I was talking to another mentor of mine. He's kind of like an uncle to me, named Jeff Ader. And we kind of like, well, I was asking him, could I do anything to help? And we kind of came up with this, you know, this truck and driving around Chicago and driving to, like, other cities around Chicago, like Milwaukee, Indianapolis, Ohio. I just actually drove back from New York.
Yeah, you're really out there raising awareness. What's been the reaction so far?
So I had a few reactions. I had a few bad reactions. I had a lot of good reactions, you know. I've been called a whole lot of you know, all the cuss words in the book. I've been called a white supremacist twice. And I'm like, okay, I've never been called that before. It just, you know, I just ignore them most of the time. And, you know, they try to explain, like, what's happening. I'm like, I understand what's happening, you know, to the innocent people and everything like that. But what I'm doing is trying to get the hostages home.
And before I let you go, Jeremiah, is there anything that you would want, say, Hirsch to know or anybody else to know that are listening right now about your friend and the hostages?
I want everyone to know that I'm here for them and I'm here for the hostages, and that I won't stop until every last one of them is free, and to tell Hirsch that I love him.
Jim.
And strong. And, you know, and tell him, you know, his Chicago family got him.
Well, Jeremiah, thank you so much for coming on and telling us your story and more about your friend Hirsch. And thank you for what you're doing. God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including Community in Mourning. A Catholic priest talks to us about his close friend, a World War II veteran who died this week at the age of 102. And a man of letters, a popular game show host, is stepping down after more than 40 years. Welcome back. A community in upstate New York is mourning the death of a 102-year-old World War II veteran. Robert Al Prichetti died on his way to France to commemorate the anniversary of D-Day. Prichetti was a practicing Catholic who attended weekly mass in Rochester. He told friends that he was looking forward to the trip to Europe, adding his doctor encouraged his travel plans. In World War II, he served in the Pacific, and after leaving the military, he taught in public schools. And for more on the life of this remarkable World War II veteran, we turn to his longtime friend, Father William Leone, pastor of the Church of St. Jerome in East Rochester, New York. Father, thank you for your time today. We really appreciate it. So if you don't mind, tell us a little bit more about your friend, Al, and what you remember most about him.
Well, I met Al in 1977, my first time I was an assistant here, and he was a weekly communicant with his wife, Algina, and they were very involved in the community, and I came back here as a pastor in 2011, have been here ever since, reunited, re-enkindled our friendship, and he was a good friend. He was like a father to me and to many others. And he wrote a book on his life, an autobiography, An American Life Well Lived. One story I like to share is his experience going to church. They lived 3 miles from the church. He grew up in a mining town in Pennsylvania. They kids had no shoes, no electric, no water running. And his dad was a miner, and his mom took care of all of them. And they went to mass one time. He said they walked to mass. It was 3 miles to get there. I had to walk home. Another time with my two sisters, Emma and I walked to mass. When we got there, the usher told us to leave because we had to attend the school children's mass, which was at a different time. We went back home without attending mass. We walked again. As we did not have a car to get us home, I've not forgotten those days, but it has not turned me away from my faith. It has made me stronger. And that was typical of, I call him Al. It was named Robert, but many called him Al. I don't know the reason. And he said, but it made his faith stronger. And I think it carried him through his years of serving in the military. He was at Iwo Jima the day the flag was raised. He served on a flagship, a communication ship. He was a radio man. And they developed a picture there of the raising of the flag. He had an original copy, which one time someone asked him to if they could see it. He mailed it to them and never got it back. But it never, you know, dimmed his positivity. He engaged with going and talk with children in schools in recent years. He stayed active. He stayed connected. And he was determined to get to Normandy to participate in the activities there this past week. The Lord called him home as he was in Germany on his way there. You might want to say he died with his boots on. And that's the kind of individual he was. He was ready to help anyone in need. So a master carpenter, a wonderful teacher. I'm going to miss him as many others will, too.
Yeah, and we were looking at pictures of him earlier. His big, beautiful smile. You can see the light of Christ in him in all those pictures. What has been the reaction from the community in Rochester to his death? And how do you hope the community will remember him?
Well, of course, when we hear the news of anyone who has died, our initial reaction is sometimes shock. But I think as the reality of it settles in, we're happy he was doing what he wanted to do. We're sad that he is leaving us, but I'm sure he's being reunited with Algina, his parents, and all those he loved. Everyone I have talked to, whether they're members of our church or members of the community, they're all going to deeply miss him, his presence, his smile. He led us in the Pledge of Allegiance at our Memorial Day remembrance here about a week or so ago. We had it on Saturday the 27th. He led us in the Pledge of Allegiance and then apologized, and he said, I didn't do that exactly right. And they said, well, Al, don't worry about that.
Well, Father, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us about your dear friend, Al. We appreciate it. God bless you.
God bless you. Thank you very much.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, one last spin. A TV icon prepares to say goodbye to a beloved game show after more than 40 years as host. Plus, learn about a concert at the Vatican celebrating an important anniversary. Are gathering at the Vatican. The initiative is part of the 40th anniversary of the founding of the Choir of the Diocese of Rome. The three-day celebration ends on Sunday with a concert followed by a sung mass in St. Peter's Basilica. The organizer says the event shows the importance of music in our faith.
Perché la musica orienta il cuore verso una direzione.
Music orients the heart towards a certain direction, and if this direction is God, then music becomes one of the most beautiful means of prayer, as we can hear right now. It helps to open up our hearts, to encounter others, and overcome differences, regardless of where you come from, of your religion, of your ideas, of your age. Music unites us all.
La musica ti unisce.
Back here in the United States, the National Eucharistic Pilgrimage is nearing its halfway point with a Western Junipero Serra route passing a very scenic part of Utah.
I just love being surrounded by the beauty and letting my heart really just be in awe of both the beauty surrounding me, but also Jesus in the Eucharist right in front of me.
Pilgrims hit the scenic route, walking with the Eucharist through desert and mountain. And for more on this story, tune in to EWTN News In Depth tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. Well, speaking of EWTN News In Depth, some exciting changes coming to the show. EWTN News contributor Catherine Hadro will be joining In Depth full-time as the show's a new host. Founding host Monsi Alvarado will be stepping down and passing on the baton in order to focus on her role as president and COO of EWTN News.
In this soundbite culture, I think we are all so hungry for more nuance, right? For more context. And again, seeking that truth and that coming together. This city in particular drives off of divisiveness, but we're really called to be a light and not heat in this world.
Catherine began at the network 11 years ago, helping to launch this show, EWTN News Nightly. Then in 2017, she became the founding host of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. After leaving that show in 2022, she stepped into a new role as a contributor for EWTN News, providing vital coverage for major Catholic stories and events. And you can hear more of Catherine and Monsi's conversation tonight again on EWTN News In Depth at 8 p.m. Well, from the big wheels at EWTN to the final spin for one game show host. After more than four decades and 8,000 shows, Pat Sajak is trading in his life as host of Wheel of Fortune for more of a freewheeling life, we shall say. Sajak, whose religious affiliation is unclear, but reportedly married at a Catholic church in Annapolis, Maryland in 1989, announced last year that he would be retiring, and tonight is his final episode. His co-host, Vanna White, paid him an emotional tribute.
As this chapter of our lives is coming to an end, I know you'll still be close by. You're like a brother to me, and I consider you a true lifelong friend who I will always adore. I love you, Pat.
And good luck to him, and God bless him in his next chapter. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.